I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Nature Jobs podcast. I'm Julie Gould. Last month, I took my family on yet another trip in search of some good stuff for the Nature Jobs podcast. This time, I went to Toulouse in France, which was home to the 2018 Euroscience Open Forum. Also colloquially known as ESOF, this event has been running biannually since 2004 and has become the largest pan-European interdisciplinary science conference and is also a showcase for European science. One of the most well-attended sessions was called The Lost Generation of European Scientists, How to Make the System More Sustainable. And the aim of the session was to discuss where the academic system in Europe has gone wrong and how we could fix it. Now, this is a really big ask, and it's something that people have been discussing for a while. But now that more and more pressure is being applied to this system, hopefully some changes can be made. I caught up with some of the speakers from the session to pick out some of the points they made. Jean-Pierre Bourguignon, who is the president of the European Research Council, aka the ERC, knows that Europe-wide changes are needed, but he says it's often difficult to do so with countries that have such different systems.
Well, the idea was to really examine, in a sense, what are the conditions done, given, condition offered to young researchers, and really to, and of course, what immediately comes to mind is the fact that from one country to the next, or even from one discipline to the next, the situations are very different. So of course, there are still some places and some disciplines where basically you find easily a possibility of employment, and you find good supervision and so on. So we see it's not uniformly negative. Another thing which is not so negative is actually the fact that if you look back 20 years and now, if I look even my discipline, I'm a mathematician, definitely the possibility of being employed in a company has grown fantastically, up to the point that in France at the moment more or less half of the PhDs actually go to companies. So of course maybe for some of them it's not what they anticipated, maybe they were not so happy about that, but at least they are employed at a level which takes advantage of their knowledge. And so it shows that the not only true for math, but I'm just giving this because I know it, because it's my speciality. So it shows that the request or the need for industry or all kinds of activities, services, to really tap into highly educated people has grown considerably, and I think it's going to continue to grow. So I think we should be aware of that, and in the sense we should not consider that somebody who has been trained at a high level in the end doesn't remain in academia, that it's a disaster.
René Schröder from the Max F. Perutz Laboratories at the University of Vienna thought the title of the talk, The Lost Generation of European Scientists, came across as rather defeatist. And she said that this attitude towards leaving academia is part of the problem.
I don't really see the lost generation. It's just that it's not a failure if you don't stay in academia. Yeah, that's totally wrong. We train people as PhDs, and that's very good for Europe, it's very good for the world. These people have great skills to do other things. They have maybe much better careers than in academia. They like it much better. The other thing is that, and that's my point, that postdocs should really think twice to which lab they go. They should really, really inform themselves where they go to do their postdocs. I think at the end of my career, I have had almost 50 PhDs and postdocs. They cannot all become professors. They didn't want to. And I think they got good training, a good education, and that's very good for whatever their career will be. And it should not feel like a failure if you don't stay in academia. We should tell the students and the postdocs what is the chance of them to becoming a professor, becoming a group leader.
So what is the chance of them becoming a professor? Well, in the United States, about 1/5 of postdocs secure a tenured position. In Europe, it's even lower. So Rolf Tarrak, who is the president of the European Universities Association and who is also a speaker on the panel, said that if we made the career paths of these postdocs more transparent, things might improve. But the main thing is that these postdocs and these early career researchers might feel a little less lost.
Imagine it is a PhD, right? PhD candidate, position for a PhD candidate. We know how many of these, what percentage then go on in a postdoc, how many of them then start working in industry, how many of them start working in industry in research, how many of them do work in industry but it has nothing to do with research, how many of them go into working in the town hall. We know these things because the supervisor, you know, talks to the PhD candidate, and I know exactly all my PhD candidates what they are doing. I know it exactly. So this information is there, and all what I said is that it should be given, and it's very simple. You know, you just say, in this institution and in this type of position, if you look at the last 5 years or the last 3 years, what they did, and then you say, well, 30% of them went on with a postdoc. Another 30% went to industry. 20% went to work in government. And the rest 20%, we don't know what they did. And that's it. You just give this information. Now, this information tells you a lot, because the person who is thinking of taking this position will see what, in reality, his or her chances are then, you know, in doing one thing or the other. And if the person wants to pursue a career in academia, and it turns out that only 10% of the people in the last 5 years in this position went on with a postdoc, well, then maybe the person says, well, this is not the best place for me.
Why is it not being made available?
I don't know. I asked myself the question yesterday. Why have the young people not asked for it? You know what they do? I mean, you know it better than me, very likely. They just talk to the supervisor. They say, well, what do you think? But this is one point of view. We need the statistics. And furthermore, supervisors are not always, they are biased. You know, I mean, they when they need a PhD, they, you know, will not tell too many things, negative things about, you know, that position. Now, they are biased. I mean, that's human. That's human behavior. I'm just saying, let us take the statistics. So, why have the universities not done it? Now, I imagine you don't give freely information if you are not asked to give it. I think that one can convince them, and I'm trying to do it. So these initiatives of doing things in a better way without pressure, that I think is quite seldom.
One other theory that I have heard, I don't know if this is true, is that universities might be reluctant to give this information because it might demonstrate that they are not able to keep on the amount of staff, or they're creating a sort of a negative working environment for academics, and they don't want that to become public information.
Well, that's that might well be the case, because it is, it's like undressing themselves a little bit. I mean, you show something which maybe you don't want to show. Imagine, I mean, now most of the institutions, most of the universities want to be research universities. I would say, I mean, we are very strong in research. Now imagine that then these data show that that is not the case. If all your PhD eventually leave academia, you know, and don't go on in research, well, then you are not really a research university. You see, because, so there is a discourse, what we say, and And that, and these data might prove that wrong. And that might well be the case.
So do you think, as your role as the president of the European University Association, do you think you can be the one to apply that pressure, change?
I'm going to write it down. And then I will share it with the board. I have a board of 8 rectors from 8 different countries, and I share it with them. And you know, I get the feedback. And if they think it is interesting, then I'll bring it to the council. In the council, we have the presidents of 33 rectors' conferences. If I convince the council, then it will be something new. Okay. And it will certainly help the young people, no doubt.
So if pressure needs to come from all levels, what is a big funding body like the ERC, for example, doing about it? Well, says Jean-Pierre, they've already started collecting data to help uncover what really happens to those who benefit from their funds.
We are one of the organizations at European level which really has a remarkable capacity of recording everything we do. So we know exactly how many women we hire, how many men we hire, what are their success rates. And actually we are at the moment performing a very substantial review of what has been the fate of people who have been employed by our ERC grantees. So not just the people who got the grant, but the people who worked for them. And so the results of the study will not be available until the end of 2019, because it's a very substantial one. But I insisted that we should not just look at the grantees, because more or less it's quite clear if you get an ERC grant, it's a push upward for your career. But we want to be sure that the people who are working with these people also get have a good future. So we will know for sure. And that's something that ERC is doing quite well, that is to try to really produce facts.
Sara Ricardo, who was the panel's moderator, is extremely passionate about creating a fairer working environment for researchers, whether they leave or stay within the academic system.
I would say that something that came from this session is we need more flexibility, we need better transparency, and we need a fair system. How do we do that? We need to generate data on all these things. We need to know and make visible these researchers in their institutions. We need the institutions to support these researchers, and we need to help them move on to other sectors if they need to, or incorporate them in institutions if they need to. We need to bring all these people that drop out, we need to bring them to light. We need to see what happens to them, where are they, and help them. Because right now, we are not focusing on them.
So here's my take on this. If you want to see any changes happen, if you want a fairer system and a more transparent career path data, then you need to start asking for it. Like Rolf said, these universities need a push to get these changes made. Thank you to Sara Ricardo, Jean-Pierre Bourguignon, René Schroeder and Rolf Tarak for speaking to me and for being very patient with my tiny humans. Over the next couple of months, we'll have a few more bits and pieces from ESOF on the Nature Jobs podcast. But in the meantime, you can follow our adventures on the Nature Jobs blog, on Twitter and on Facebook. Thanks for listening. I'm Julie Gould.